Welcome to Keeping Up with the Kick-Ass Canadians. I'm talking today with iconic news anchor Kevin Newman. Kevin, thank you for joining the program.
Oh, thanks for asking me, Amanda.
You wear many hats, and one of them is as fill-in anchor for CTV News, which put you back at the helm all last week. You helped guide Canadians through the October 22nd shootings in Ottawa, the tragic loss of Corporal Nathan Cirillo, and the assault on Parliament. What was it like for you to be back on duty during such significant events?
Well, you sort of don't have time to think of it in those terms. It's just, you know, I mean, those are the moments that were kind of like first responders. You get into position as fast as you can, and I was in a doctor's meeting when I got the call to get in, so I had to, you know, race in as fast as I could. I think I got there in about 45 minutes. I was literally running through the streets of Toronto to my car to get on the expressways. And then you basically struggle to keep focus, stay calm, not get ahead of the story, and make sure that what you're saying is as accurate as you know it to be at that time, and to source everything. So, I mean, as you mentioned, I've been in that position a few times in my career, and so I kind of know how to do it. But you know, you never know how it's going to turn out when you actually sit in the chair, or how long you're going to be there.
You've talked about having to maintain a certain degree of detachment when you're covering upsetting events. Was this one of those occasions? I mean, was it really hard to see everything unfold without knowing what could come next in Ottawa or throughout the country?
Yeah, I mean, I think there has to be a detachment, because you're describing events which are frightening people, so you don't want to contribute to their fear. That being said, I mean, I think there were a few instances where, you know, the first few times that we saw the Globe and Mail's video, smartphone video of the gunfire, it was impossible not to, you know, use words like atrocious and terrifying and things like that, because it just factually was. But I think in a moment like that, and if you remember back to it, you know, what we didn't know at the time was whether or not that man was acting alone, whether it was part of something that had still to unfold in other parts of the country or even in Ottawa. So, I think your role at a moment like that is to, you know, remain as calm and as cool and as precise as you can be, and not to, you know, contribute to either hysteria or, anger. You know, very cautious about impugning motives. I mean, one of the things that, you know, I did point out, though, was that, you know, like in 9/11, the attacker had chosen the targets mostly for their symbolic purpose and what they would say and how they would sort of strike the hearts of Canadians. So, you know, you make those kinds of connections, but, you know, we were very cautious in the day to even, you know, connect them in any way to ISIS or any of that kind of thinking.
Yeah. Well, what are your thoughts on what this could or should mean for Canada going forward as far as security and that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, we'll never know the man's full motivation, because he was obviously killed in the gunfire. You know, I think it obviously opened up a lot of eyes to, you know, the security on the Hill, per se. But, it, you know, I think we're hearing a lot of cautionary tales about, you know, let's not overreact. Let's not give authorities, you know, too much power. Because there's, you know, ultimately in these kinds of situations, you can't really, you know, fully prevent them. If there's somebody who is, you know, disturbed and angry enough to want to try these kinds of things, I don't know that any amount of surveillance would necessarily stop them. I don't know what the answer to that is. I think it's still too early days.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the atrocious footage, some from iPhones and that kind of thing, of what was going on. And that makes me think of your show, Kevin Newman Live. I mean, you very much wanted to bring that kind of thing into the fold. Can you talk a bit about that? The show was unfortunately canceled last June. First of all, what was it, a question of ratings?
No. You know, I never really got a full answer. What we were told was that it was a financial consideration, that the news division had to take a fairly hefty budget cut. And, you know, at times like that, they look around and they say, well, what's our core, what we do, and what is, you know, maybe a luxury. And, you know, I think what the show had going for it was that the ratings were, you know, pretty good. They were okay. I think we were only 7 months in, and I don't know any show that, you know, proves itself in 7 months. So, you know, I don't feel we really had a chance to prove ourselves in that short amount of time. I think what we were able to do, though, was to surprise people with a different kind of new show, you know, original format, more digitally focused in its content. And I think, you know, my colleagues, anyway, I heard some pretty good things about, you know, they understood that we were trying to pioneer something different and new. So, you know, what can you say? I mean, at one, they had to cut money, and you know, we were a show that everybody was on contract, the remote staff position, so we were a relatively easy place to look to if the order came down to slash money. So, you know, it is what it is. I'm sorry we didn't get more time. We basically didn't even get a second iteration of the show to learn what was working, what wasn't, and try to improve it. But, you know, that's the nature of the media business these days.
But is that something you might want to revisit in the future?
Well, I still believe in it. I still believe, you know, even if, you know, that show never survives, there are enough good ideas in it that worked. And you already see other people picking them up. I looked at Amanda Lang show last week, and she was doing the, you know, the editorial meeting and filming it the way that we had pioneered. And so I think there's a lot of good ideas that will show up in other shows, but I still in my heart believe that we had found a template for a different kind of news show that younger viewers would watch. And in fact, the ratings showed that, you know, typically demographics for new shows on traditional television are fairly old. I mean, the average age of the viewers somewhere between 62 and 67. Ours was down in the 40s. So, you know, we had succeeded in a short amount of time in establishing, you know, a template for a younger demographic for news and a more advertiser-friendly demographic. But, you know, in the end, you know, that wasn't enough to save it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I hope that it is revisited because I found it very engaging.
Thank you. No, it was the most fun I've ever had in television, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, speaking of a different media form, you are also working on a book, and I understand it's a little bit under wraps, but what can you say about it?
Well, I mean, it's part memoir. It's actually mostly memoir, but I'm co-writing it with my son Alex. And it's sort of an exploration of a father and son's connection, a father and son, each of our sort of challenges in our lives in trying to figure out, you know, who we are and what makes us authentic. And in my case, that story is tied into my career. And because in television, there's a lot of people who are trying to mold you and shape you and, you know, focus group test you and all that kind of stuff. And it's really hard to try to hold on to who you are against all of sort of that pressure. And in my son's case, you know, as a teenager, he was struggling with being gay. And so he was going through sort of a different kind of search for authenticity and trying to be who he was. So that's the sort of the narrative that connects us in different areas. But we're also kind of, you know, trying to begin a conversation among fathers and sons when their sons are gay, because they're conversations that don't tend to happen. And typically, you know, a father's acceptance of their gay child is the single most important indicator of whether or not that child is accepted and their happiness. So, you know, we're talking about ourselves and our own journeys, but I think what we're trying to do is illustrate a conversation that can happen between men, you know, about sexuality and about fatherhood.
Is there a targeted release date for that?
Hopefully a year from now. This is a very long tail industry. So I have to sort of finish the first draft of it by the end of this month. And then, you know, the editors get involved and we see whether it's any good.
Yeah. And who's publishing it?
Random House, Penguin Random House is publishing it. So we have a publisher who's been terrific and very patient, because it's sort of taken a pivot a few times, as anything in the creative process does. But I got to tell you, it's a whole lot of work. I don't know that I've ever read another book because it's incredibly time consuming.
Yeah. I really look forward to reading that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I didn't want to just do a career memoir. I wanted to have something to say. And I do think my career has been a struggle between, you know, trying to be a good dad and trying to be successful.
Yeah. Well, I remember I read a piece you wrote somewhere about when Alex came out to you, and it was incredibly moving. So I think there'll be a lot more to explore in the book.
I hope so. It's not something that, I mean, when we did a search, we couldn't find any fathers who have written about the experience. Lots of mothers have and lots of kids have, but the fathers haven't. And they, you know, they're really, really important to their kids' mental health at that particular time in their lives.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to that. If listeners want to follow you, they can go to @KevinNewmanCTV on Twitter. And Kevin, I want to thank you again for helping, just being the voice of calm and reason throughout October 22nd. I personally was very reassured just watching you.
Yeah, well, it was. Thank you very much. I'm glad you say that because, you know, you end up sort of pushing down your own emotions and, you know, like a doctor does in an emergency room or whatever, you just sort of execute. But sometimes you forget that, you know, people are watching you and they're taking their cues from you. So I'm thankful you said that.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for joining me today.
All right. Take care, man. And congratulations again with Kick-Asses.